Reading this morning will be taken from Matthew chapter 26, verses 26 through 29. Now as they were eating, Jesus took bread, and after blessing it, broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." You may be seated.
We're in the midst of studying the final week of Jesus' life, the greatest week in history. If you were to, kind of a morbid thought for a little bit, but I want you to, serious, sobering thought, but if you were to know you had a final meal, a final supper, this is the case for those who are on death row, who are going to be put to death, and we have kept a record of all the meals. You can go to Wikipedia and they have kept the historical record of all the different meals that prisoners have requested, and this goes back, they dated this back for the last century. And some very odd meals. Some have chosen KFC and pizza. Others have chosen steak and salmon and olives and things like that. I mean, just a very odd, peculiar request. Some didn't want hardly anything. In the John Grisham's book, The Reckoning, fictitious book, he tells about an inmate who's about to be put to death. And he's allowed, in Mississippi, he's allowed to go to his own house. And he's able to meet with his family, and he's able to share some things with them and talk to them about life, and has a pork chop, and it's all the country fixings, and before that. We're in the final week of Jesus' life, and it's Thursday, and Jesus knows he's about to be betrayed. He has a final meal, which will in some ways become the first meal for all of us as Christians, as he will institute his Lord's Supper in the occasion of this final meal celebrating the Passover with his disciples. In this final meal, Christ is going to give several things, but before we do that, I want you to think about what happens. It's Thursday morning, and Christ sends some of his disciples on ahead to prepare the way. They had to get a lamb, had to buy a lamb, probably. They had to probably stand in line, probably for a long time, unless they were able to somehow do it quicker, because there were thousands of people there in Jerusalem also getting their lamb sacrificed. They had to get the lamb sacrificed between 12 and 6, because the Passover in the Bible talked about doing that lamb, sacrificing that lamb at twilight. So they did it as the sun was going down. Had to get that lamb sacrificed. They had to get the lamb cooked. They had to get supplies bought, things like bitter herbs, unleavened bread, wine, and then they had to get a room, an upper room that Christ had said would be available, and they had to get that room prepared for them men to come and eat the Passover there. In this room, they would have had to make sure the room was clean of all leaven, because there couldn't be any leaven there, and they would have to make it with a table with all the furnishings to be able to provide for the meal. So this was an elaborate process. In Luke's account, Jesus says he has eagerly desired to eat this Passover with them. He's excited about this final meal. He's excited about this family meal. And he has some great purposes in this meal. This meal can be found recorded in Exodus 12. The beginning of it in the teachings on the Passover is found in the three synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And then John does not tell us explicitly about the giving of the communion items. He tells us about what happens before that, when Christ will wash the disciples' feet. And then Paul will recount this meal in 1 Corinthians 10, and specifically in chapter 11. Now, I'm going to refer to some of those, and we'll be turning there. But I'm also talking in some of these things I'm just going to tell you. But I want you to know all this is in those passages. And I would encourage you in your study to read all those passages, to understand all that happens on this Thursday evening, the final meal. They also are going to sing some songs, read some scriptures. The Passover is involving a larger meal, larger context of them spending this time together, probably a couple hours or so, and the Lord's Supper items are going to come out of that context. So it's in the midst of this meal that Christ does institute his memorial. Why does he do that? Why does he institute his memorial? There are three themes that run through this meal that we should know that will remind us of why Christ wants us to partake of the Lord's Supper each Sunday. The first thing that we see in this meal is that it is to be a memorial. Do this in remembrance of me. If you go back to Exodus chapter 12, the Old Testament festival of the Passover involved a memorial. Verse 14, this day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. As a statute forever, you shall keep it as a feast. Now this is in the context, Exodus chapter 12. There have been 9 plagues. God was about to bring on the 10th plague, the death of the firstborn. But before he does, he tells them to kill a lamb, the best male lamb of their flock, to put the blood on the doorpost and the lintel of their houses, to get their entire house in, to roast that lamb, to eat that lamb, to participate in this meal, which will be a perpetual memorial feast to remember. What are they remembering? They're remembering that they're going to go from slave to freedom. And it is this occasion that God will send them out of Egypt. In fact, a part of this is going to be the festival of the unleavened bread, because they are told back in Egypt not to have leaven, because it would take a while for that yeast to affect the bread and for it to be able to rise and then them cook it. But they're to have unleavened bread because they don't have time. They have to leave Egypt in a hurry. They have to get out. And so this is all symbolic of the Passover is about them going from slavery to freedom, from being in sin to being reconciled to God, from being a people who were in death and in sin to being now the covenant people of God. And so it's in the context of this Passover meal, which was a memorial back to that occasion where Jesus says, I want you to take these emblems and do it in remembrance of me. Now the term remembrance is significant. The term remembrance in our culture and in their culture, in the Hebrew idea, is not just to call forward a fact. For example, you guys are supposed to remember your wife's anniversary. Your wife. Wife. Well, they're wives. Supposed to remember your, I'm getting in trouble here talking about wife. It's January 1st, 2020. 2000. I know, I didn't even use this one in the first sermon. Anyways, you get in trouble for not remembering your anniversary. Why? Because you're supposed to remember the anniversary and not just call to mind the date of it, but you're supposed to remember it with an incentive to present action. You're supposed to show your love on that day. You're supposed to be reminded of your love. Just like we have certain American holidays, July 4th, where we remember what happened when we declared our independence. And we do that not just to remember 9/11, not just to remember what happened when those airplanes flew in the building, but we do that to call forth certain action today, to remind us that we need to live in that reality of that today. And so it is that we are to remember the Lord's death, and we are to call that to mind to incite us to present action today, to love him today, to care for him today, and follow him today. And so we are to do this in remembrance of him. In the book of Job, Job talked about this same idea and about how all of us want to be remembered. And he says in chapter 19, 23 and 24, something that I think everybody has a similar desire. Anybody that's suffering and going through problems. Oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book. Oh, that with an iron pen and lead, they were engraved in the rock forever. Job says, I wish that I could just write down my story in a rock and everybody would be able to see it from that day forward. That's what we do, isn't it? We put in our cemeteries, we put a rock. It's supposed to last for years. And we engrave upon it the name, dates, pictures, words. Why? Because we want to remember. We want other people to remember. Several years ago, we went out to Linville and a group of us, Joe Ben kind of helped lead us in this, and we went down and we cleared out several old cemeteries, and I'm sure they may be grown back up by now, but if they haven't been continued to take care of, but we discovered, and you discovered, that there's a lot of graves out here, some of them knocked over, some of them stones moved and around, and you can't even tell where all the graves are, but they'd become neglected. Here are people that families loved and they buried 100 years ago, 75 years ago, some 150 years ago maybe. And now no one is remembering. No one is taking care of that now. And in a way, what Christ was doing at his final meal was he was saying, I don't want you to forget. I don't want you to allow the cemetery to become overgrown. I don't want you to allow the date to pass and you not remember that this is an anniversary. I don't want you to allow 9/11 to go by and forget what happened that day. He's saying, I don't want you to allow my death to go by and forget. It said that we had 400,000 deaths in World War II of American soldiers. And 79,000 of those were not accounted for. To this day, we still have 72,000 who have never been identified. Recently, a friend from Tennessee was traveling, and they ran into a Marine, and she told them that their mission, their efforts that they were doing, is that they were flying in the remains of a World War II soldier, still finding and identifying soldiers from World War II. There's still 72,000 who are not there, who have not been identified, who they don't have a memorial other than the tomb of the unknown soldier to them. Why? It's significant. We care about that. That's heartbreaking in a way, because there's families who never were able to have their loved one and have a proper burial. Christ is saying, I want y'all to remember. And one of the reasons we should come to worship each week, and one of the reasons we should want to assemble, and one of the reasons if we're not able to come to worship, we should take of the Lord's Supper, is because it's telling Jesus, I have not forgotten. I remember. I remember, Lord. Do this in remembrance of me. But then notice also, it is a sacrifice. Take eat, this is my body. Take, drink, this is my blood. You know, we say you are what you eat. If you eat junk food, you're going to turn into, health-wise, junkiness. If you eat healthy food, then we say, you know, they try to get us to believe this, right? You're going to be healthy. The doctor trying to convince you, you need to eat healthy food because you are what you eat. Now, that applies religiously as well, doesn't it? When you think about the Jews, they were known in their community, they're known in the world for their dietary restrictions. To be a part of that community, to be a Jewish person, restricted and regulated what you ate. There was all kinds of rules related to what they could eat. Today, Muslims are known for what they eat. They have dietary restrictions, and be a part of that community involves them eating a certain way. In a certain way, Christians, though we do not have as many dietary restrictions today, we are what we eat. And it designates you as a part of a community by eating this food. And that's what Jesus is saying. You are claiming to be a part of my community. You are what you eat. Now turn to John chapter 6. John chapter 6, where Jesus is going to talk about this same idea. And he says this in verse 53 and following. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Eat the flesh, drink his blood. Now that was offensive. Jews could not eat blood. They were forbidden from blood. They couldn't eat food cooked in blood. They couldn't eat anything that had blood as it's not cooked out of it. And that's a part of even the requirements they gave to Christians in Acts 15 about that, to the Gentile Christians, who pagans ate more of those things. Jews were not able to. This was offensive to think about eating or drinking blood and eating flesh, the flesh of another man. Verse 54, whoever feeds on my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. What's Jesus saying? He's saying, you've got to fully take me in. I don't think he's at this time directly talking about the Lord's Supper, but I do think it is in allusion, and he will get to that later, certainly here in this final memorial. But at this time he's saying that he is the bread of life. He is the everlasting water. That you've got to take him in. You've got to fully drink of him. You've got to allow Jesus' life to become your life. And that eating of the flesh and drinking of the blood is a reminder of us each week that we are to take Jesus into our life. We are to live him out. That we are his people. Now, on this occasion, John chapter 6, numerous people then are going to find that saying hard, verse 60. They think that's a hard saying. They say, I don't want to drink his blood. I don't want to eat his flesh. That is offensive, because in a Jewish mind, that was shocking. That was offensive. And many people turn away, the multitudes turn away, and stop following after him. And Jesus even turns to his disciples and says, are you also going to leave? And Peter says, to whom shall we go? For you have the words of eternal life. You see, we are to understand that the sacrifice, that the elements of the Lord's Supper are about taking Jesus into our life and living him out. In the Old Testament, the idea behind this was that they would have sacrifices, and that priests would take that lamb, take that animal, and they would offer a sacrifice, and then he would cook that. And there were certain sacrifices where just the priest would eat it. There were certain sacrifices where the meal would also be shared with the worshiper. And there was a sense where they believed that you were taking in God. You were having a meal with God. And you were, the priest representing God and God being there. And it was a communal meal with God. That's what this is. And the pagans believed that. The pagans believed that when you went into the idol's temple, you were eating with that idol. And that's why the Christians, 1 Corinthians 8 and other places, could not go into those idol's temple and eat, because you were having participation with the idol. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul is speaking of the same idea. In verse 16, he says this, the cup of blessing that we bless, is it not a participation in the blood of Christ? The bread that we break, is it not a participation or fellowship in the body of Christ? Because there is one bread, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread. We're all participating, we're all fellowshipping in the one bread, the one body. We have communion together, a common union. And so Christ is wanting to say that I am the Lamb. And just like in that Passover meal, everybody gathered in that house and partook of that lamb, and everybody partook, staked their claim in the significance of that blood, and the angel passed over because of the blood. When I see the blood, I will pass over, Exodus 12 says. So we proclaim that when you see the blood, this is my part in the blood, so he can pass over. So we have the blood of Christ upon us. When you think about the Lord's Supper, it is about, yes, an individual sacrifice, but it's also about we are a part of a community. You know, we take these small individual communions now, but I hope that we don't lose the image by that. Now, you know, we used to have it up here, and the men would spread out and pass the plates, and we understand we're not doing that because of of COVID and trying to reduce the spread of infection. And throughout the centuries, Christians have done the meal in different ways. But what is always essential is the elements, the unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine. But here's the thing. It's important for us to always remember that whether it is an individual thing or whether it is, you know, we used to have crackers and we had the little individual crackers and things like that, that it's really all symbolically coming from one loaf. And then it's symbolically coming from one cup. And then even though we're drinking our individual cups here, that we are all a part of the communion. We're all a part of the one body, the one bread, and we're all staking our claim in that one blood that was shed for us. And so that means that I can't truly do the Lord's Supper individualistically. That whether I'm at home by myself, I'm still, if I understand it properly, doing it with all the other Christians who are doing it in the world on the Lord's Day. And it means also that I have a responsibility, as I best I can, to assemble and do it with the brethren as a local church. It means that I have a commitment and obligation to my fellow brethren to be united with them and to love them and to care about them. And even as we have two services, it's important to remember that as we are protecting the Lord's Supper, that we're doing it along at the same time, not literally, but at the same way and manner and in the same symbolic with our brethren in the first service. That we're all partaking of the one cup, the one bread, because we're all Christians. And it's important to remember that it's all because of that sacrifice. And so don't let the image of an individualistic cup you pick up think that you're just doing it individualistically. We're doing it as a body and as a community together. It is what designates us differently from people in the world. We proclaim, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11, we proclaim the Lord's death until he comes as often as we eat and drink this. And so the third theme then that we need to emphasize, the third thing we need to emphasize is one that happened before Christ got to those emblems. And that is the theme of service. Now, why would service be a part of the supper? Remember I said that the Lord's Supper, as Christ came there and was wanting to institute this, he wanted to institute something that would be a memorial. He wanted us to know that this is about his sacrifice, but he also wanted us to know that we should leave changed, that we should come in to commune, but we should then, because of that communion, because of the strength we get, because we've been eating a meal with God, we've had a family meal together with other Christians, then we go out to serve. Now, what's interesting is when we think about the Lord's Supper, people will say, and I think all of us struggle with this, will say, well, I have trouble staying focused. I have trouble staying focused. And we mean that in two ways. We mean we have trouble staying focused during the act of the Lord's Supper, remembering the Lord's death and everything. We also, if we think about it, probably mean it in a secondary way. We have trouble staying focused on Christ in our lives. I think one of the reasons God asks us to do it each week is so we need that constant reminder every week. Because during the week, we can struggle. And we need to be reminded that we are to live for Jesus. We are to serve for Jesus. That we're a part of his church and that we are to live as a Christian. So we struggle with focus. Another thing we struggle with as Christians is we struggle to not think that it's about ourselves and to want to serve others and have an attitude of humility toward others. That's what God knew the church was going to struggle with. He knew the church was going to struggle with focus and with unity. You know what's interesting? When you come to that Last Supper, what are the disciples struggling with? Luke tells us that they came in arguing about who's the greatest. John will tell us that they've been arguing about who's the greatest. They're saying, I deserve the best seats in the kingdom. I am the one who needs to be the leader of the group. I think I'm closest to Jesus. They're arguing about who is the greatest. So they come into this room that has been prepared to have this Lord's Supper, where Christ is going to tell them about what he's doing. He's offering his life for them. And what are they doing? Arguing about who's the greatest. During the midst of the supper, they struggle to maintain focus because they're even then arguing about, well, who's going to betray him? Is it I? Is it I? Or is it you? I wonder what's going on here. They're all debating about that. There's not a focus. Aren't they like the church? And so Christ takes a towel, John 13. He takes a towel and he takes a basin and he will go around and he will wash all of the disciples' feet. Then at the end of that, John 13, verse 15, he says, I have given you an example. Do as I have done to you. The supper is about reminding us that I come in and I am a sinner who have been saved. I was in slavery, but now I'm free. That I have a relationship with all these other brethren that I'm supposed to love and care about and serve, and that I don't need to be arguing about, am I the greatest? Am I the most significant? I need to be thinking about what can I do to serve my fellow man and serve my fellow Christian. The Lord's Supper reminds us that if we're going to be like Jesus, we have to be willing to take a towel. We have to be willing to get on our knees. We have to be willing to serve. If I come in and partake of the Lord's Supper, then when I go out, I'm not going to be prideful and arrogant, but I'm going to be willing to say, I can help you. I can serve you. I can rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. I can bear with my brethren. I can love one another. You see, the supper is about reminding us about who we are so we can then serve others out of that. Read the first few verses of John 13, where Jesus will say this, or the Bible says this about Jesus. Now there, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And during supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hand, that he had come from God and he was going back to God, rose from the supper, laid aside his outer garments, taking a towel and tied it around his waist. Notice what Jesus knew when he took of the Lord's Supper and instituted it. He knew that he had come from God and he was going back to God. When we take of the Lord's Supper, we are reminded of what God did for us. That we have come from God. We are created by God. And God offered his life for us. And we are reminded that we're going back to God. We're going to have to give an account to God. And therefore, if we know where we've come from, we know where we're going, then we can know why we're here. And why are we here? We're here to serve. We're here to love. What does the context say? Christ, having loved his own, he loved them to the end. The supper should be a cause for us to love. We can love the lost. We can love the brethren. We can love one another more. We can love our family more. Because why? Because we have partaken of the Lord's Supper. You see, we're now able to serve because we know where we've come from. We know where we're going. And we know why we're here. When you think about the Lord's Supper and the final meal, Christ came and he had one last meal to eat, a final supper that really would become a first supper in many ways, because he knew we would be partaking this in his new kingdom, in his covenant. And we'll be remembering him. We'll be honoring him. We'll be remembering his sacrifice. And we'll be encouraged to serve, all because of this meal we take each Sunday. This morning, if you're not a child of God, and you are not able, because you're not a Christian, take of the Lord's Supper, to say, that's my stake in the bread, that's my stake in the Lamb's blood that flowed from Calvary, because you've never given your life to Christ, you've never ate of his flesh and drank of his blood, then don't delay. Put Christ on in baptism. Become a child of God. If you need to rededicate your life, if you used to come to the family meal and you used to be a part of the family meal, the Lord's Supper, but you have not been acting like a Christian should act, you need to come back to the family and you say, I want to be restored. I want to put Christ first in my life. I want to live for Him so I can partake of the Lord's Supper. It's a serious thing, 1 Corinthians 11. It's a serious thing. I want to partake of it in a worthy manner. I want to partake of it in a pure manner. If you need to do that, then come as together we stand and as we sing.